Good evening, everyone. Hello, my name is Steve, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jan.
Welcome to the marathon meeting of the 2005 International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let us please open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Singleness of purpose statement. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are glad you're all here, especially newcomers. In keeping with our singleness of purpose and our third tradition, which states that the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking, we ask that all who participate confine their discussion to their problems with alcohol. This meeting will be taped in its entirety. Tapes of this and other meetings are available by filling out the forms in your convention materials or by visiting the taping table at the registration area in the convention center. The taping is done in the spirit of carrying the message. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and film. Thus, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker, indeed no AA member, be identified by full name or photograph in a published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our effort to help our other problem drinkers who wish to share our recovery program with us, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. The format of this meeting is that the first speaker will share for 15 minutes, the second to share for 15 minutes. Then the chairperson will call on members of the audience to share. Please limit your sharing to 3 minutes so that we can have as many people as possible to participate. And I will remind you if you go over your 3 minutes. So to read the 12 traditions, or the 12 steps, pardon me, I've asked Eamon J. from the St. Clemens Group.
Hi, I'm Eamon. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Eamon.
Okay, so these are the 12 steps. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks, Steve.
And And to read the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've asked Graham E.
I'm Graham, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Graham.
The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon A, unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself through our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants that do not govern. 3, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name might never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
First speaker for tonight will be, Bob Y. from Bridgeton, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bob.
This is my first international convention. That's mainly because I was an active alcoholic 5 years ago. And the topic is quantity, not quality. It's actually quality, not quantity. So that's enough about quantity. Okay. This is my, like I said, first convention. It's not my first trip to Toronto. I had made another business trip to Toronto back in the late 80s, 87, 88. They kind of rolled together. But it was very similar because just like they had the flags last night at the ceremony, they were all lined up in front of the stage. I had found a bar that had all these beers from different countries lined up across the bar, and they gave you a scorecard, and you could drink around the world. And I was only going to be there for a few days, but I made a valiant effort, and so I don't remember much about Toronto. At any rate, the topic again was quality, not quantity. And I'll try to give as much of my story as I can and stay on that topic. Unlike most of you, when I first got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was beaten down and, ready to do anything. And, I had financial problems. I had problems at work. I had problems with the law. Just problems and problems and problems. And that's how I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sent into a rehab by my company, who thought that I was worth keeping. And I didn't want to be there. I had no intention of admitting I was an alcoholic first off or doing anything that they were going to suggest. So as a result, I went to this thing, and I didn't say I was an alcoholic, and I didn't say anything. And then the counselor reminded me that my job was kind of based on going through this program, and she had the power to tell my employers, don't bother. So then the next day, I became an alcoholic, and I freely admitted it and went on from there. And what I got out of that first rehab was to don't drink and go to meetings. And what that did for me was the first stage of what they I've read was your first stage is becoming dry, your second stage is becoming sober, and then the third stage is achieving sobriety. Well, my whole first go-round of going through the rehab, I stayed dry. I didn't drink, and I went to meetings. And I listened to people at those meetings, some of which would go into all the details of how much they drank and how much how drunk they got and reliving the past of their drinking days. And they were the kind of guys that I was listening to. I wanted to, you know, I could relate to them. And then there were other people that I kind of ignored. They would talk about spiritual awakenings and, you know, quality of life and picking yourself up and picking up the pieces and getting sober and maintaining your sobriety. And they were the people that I tuned out. Okay, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. I had a 16-year-old daughter who she meant the world to me, and she was brilliant and athletic and just had everything going for her. And she was diagnosed with leukemia, and within a month, she died from leukemia. And at that point in time, I prayed to God every day. It was, like I said, it was about a month time period, and I prayed to God every day for him to take me, this worthless drunk, and to spare this girl who had everything to offer the world. And he opted not to go with that, with my will. So then erased God from my life completely. I had no use for him, and I continued to go to some meetings, and shortly after that, I just went out and drank to go to sleep and drank to clear my head and just whatever. I just drank and drank and drank. So, believe it or not, I wound up back in a rehab. And how that came about was I had it, and I knew that I couldn't continue to drink the way I drank, and I packed up my bags, and I went to the rehab, and I said, "Take me, you know, I'm yours." And then they told me, "Well, you know, your insurance, this and that, you're not staying here. You can come in a couple of times a week." So here I am now, ready to go at it and give it my all, and I find out that I'm not even a good enough alcoholic to get into the rehab. So I did go into the 3 days a week routine, and there again, don't drink, go to meetings, don't drink, go to meetings. And I did, and I started not drinking, going to meetings. This time I had a little bit more emphasis in it. And, well, I won't go into that part. Anyway, I started going to meetings, and I was still in a fog. I would listen to the people that talked about how they used to drink and how they, you know, all the war stories. And there again, I was kind of tuned in with them. You know, I would go to the meetings and read the how it works, and you know, like a Philadelphia lawyer trying to pick out, hey, that's me, man, constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. That's not too bad. You know, there are such unfortunates, they're not at fault. Yeah. So I'd be looking at that part of the stuff. And like I said, my mind was still cloudy, and I just wasn't getting it. But the people that had quality sobriety that would talk about how they came to give their will and their life over the care of God as they understood them, and the people that that talked about willingness and, you know, making a better life for themselves, they were still talking. And then I'm going to give an example now of the closest thing I've had to a spiritual awakening. It was at one meeting. I just looked around the room, and I just discounted the people that gave the war stories. And I started looking at the people that I had come to respect from going to the meetings, the people that had quality sobriety, the people that had turned their will and their life over to the care of God, and that they all had a spiritual foundation. And these were the people that I wanted to be like, that had a spiritual foundation in that. And it all came to me that, hey, if you want it, you know, these are the people that you need to look at, and these are the people that you need to follow. And but I had this little feud going on with God. He had done me wrong. He had taken my daughter, and I just had that to get by. It was probably only a week later. I was at a step meeting, and he was talking about, well, you know, and they gave an example of how, you know, you haven't been praying. What are you going to do now? You know, and then it just said, well, you just start. It's as simple as that. You start praying, and it comes to you, and you pray more, and you meditate. So, and I invested in a book at a convention I went to called Spiritual Awakenings, and I started reading that, and it's a good book, by the way. I don't sell them or anything, but it's a good spiritual program. It tells people how they've come to find their higher power and different examples. Anyway, I would read that daily, and I would read prayer and meditation books, and I started praying, and I started gaining a spiritual foundation, and that is where I'm heading now. I went through the dry period. I didn't drink, so I was dry. I mean, your life gets a little better. But, you know, that's just because you put down the drink. And then I went to a period where I was sober. I started listening a little bit. And now I'm working on a program now of quality sobriety. And that's the topic. So I hope that I didn't put everybody to sleep. And I hope that I see you all in San Antonio in 5 years. Thank you.
Our second speaker is Tom V. from Portland, Charlotte, Florida.
My name's Tom V. I'm from Port Charlotte, Florida. My home group is the Early Birds. We meet Monday and Thursday, 5:30, and you're all welcome. I mean, everybody here doesn't have to come the same night, though. With the help of the people in AA, my last drink was February 9th, 1993. I was 60 years old. And when I first came into the program, I walked into, after a few months' meetings, I walked into a meeting, and I heard young people say, well, I went on a commitment with somebody, and I heard the young people saying, well, ask him. And the kid said, you know, these old times, they all say the same shit. He had more time in the program than I did. He didn't know it. Anyhow, the topic tonight is quality, not quantity. I have to digress a minute. My wife and I were walking down King Street, I think it was yesterday morning, and there was a young lady and a man. The lady stretched out on the sidewalk on a blanket, and right around the corner was a man. See, my wife and I got married after I got sober. Almost everything she knows about me, but some things just never come up. And she said, well, you never slept out in the street, did you? I said, yes, I did. I slept in subways, street corners, at one time or another in my career. A lot of jails, too. But it's every once in a while these little things come up because it's a learning experience. I've been sober a little over 12 years, but I've been only married about 7. And my first contact with AA came back in the 70s after my first wife threw me out. And I was watching TV in a furnished room down in Bradley Beach, New Jersey. And they read the list of things. If you have these things, you may have a problem. Call this number. So I called the number. And the guy says, "Are you ready to stop drinking the rest of your life?" I said, "What are you, out of your effing mind? I just want to know how to drink without getting drunk, getting locked up, passing out." So I was off and running for quite a few more years. In fact, I got thrown out by a second wife. I couldn't understand why they kept throwing me out. I always worked. They always had a roof over their head. They never had to work. Because that's one good thing. I was a good alcoholic. In order for me to drink, I had to have money in my pocket. And my family had to have a place to stay. And there's a lot of us that are alcoholics that live that way all their lives. I was fortunate that I did come in when I did, because I wasn't really ready to die, even though over my career I had tried to kill myself. I was just sick of living the way I was. My spiritual program is something else. I made a lot of meetings all over the country. My first convention was San Diego, which, by the way, I was able to stay in my brother-in-law's house when I was out there, but he wouldn't let me stay there when I was drinking. He was afraid I'd pee to bed. It's, anyhow, I forgot my line of track. Thoughts come and go, but, over the years, I thought I had quality. Well, when I got the letter from the House committee that they'd like me to speak about quality, not quantity, my alcoholic ego went into high gear. And I'm sitting around and I'm saying, "Well, who the hell do I know that has quantity but no quality?" Well, that one at that meeting and this one at that meeting and that meeting is this. Oh, I almost was ready to write a speech. So, luckily, I went to my home group and somebody asked for a topic. And I said, "Well, maybe some of you guys can pick your brain for some ideas of where I might find some quality people around here." Well, very fortunately, my home group put me in my place. It wasn't your quality versus your quantity. It was my quality versus my quantity. And even though the years were going on, apparently my quality was going downhill because I was taking your inventory, not mine. And it's like you've heard before, if you're pointing the finger out, the other fingers are pointing back at you. And I was really embarrassed. Not really. I had to look embarrassed. But it did put me in my place. But it's amazing how my mind, my ego, automatically picked up on the fact that it was somebody else's quality I had to look for. But then when the dawn broke And I had to realize it was my quality. Believe me, in the short time since I've received that, my life has changed some. I'm looking inside a little more instead of outside. And that's part of what the program's all about. My spiritual program is, when I first came in the program, I like to say I was an atheist. And my sponsor wanted to bounce me off the wall. After many, many heated discussions over ice cream sodas, and he loved banana splits. And a lot of discussions, he finally said, "Look, do you believe that I believe?" I said, "Yes, I do." He says, "That's all I want. That's a start." And the last time I saw him was a few years ago, because he's still in New Hampshire. He says, "You still believe?" I said, "Yes, I do." The great thing about the program is when I first came in a little place called Dover, New Hampshire, there's a place called the Triangle Club, and I used to walk in there. There was one guy that my sponsor used to call, "Stay away from that Bible thumper." And they used to pick on me because I was adamant in my belief. And I probably, if I hadn't had the sponsor I had, I probably would have left the program because I was not willing, or I couldn't find it in my heart or my mind to accept somebody else's belief. And I was able to make at this convention, found a group that I fit in with. I never knew I was an agnostic. So you get a title when you come here. And I don't believe there's not anything out there. But like I told my sponsor one time, I said, "Well, when I get there, if I find something, maybe they'll forgive me." It's been the trip for the last 12-some-odd years compared to the trip for the last 40-some-odd years prior to that has been something else again. The war stories, I could really tell you war stories, and it wouldn't accomplish anything. It's what's happened since I came into the program. The people I've met and the meetings I've been to and various things. Like I say, I have a spiritual belief of my own. The one thing I have that's hanging on the wall in my house is the Serenity Prayer. Because since I got sober, and like all married couples, since I got married, I've had to say that prayer a few times. Just because we get sober, life doesn't change. We all walk the same path in that respect. But to come to a place like this, my wife's first convention was Minneapolis. And she was awed, just like she's been awed at this one. But nobody in her family has ever had a drinking problem. And she does very well bearing up with me every once in a while when a story pops up that I didn't remember before. And she'll say, "You did?" "Yes, I did." But my quality is getting better. There's an old timer in my home group. He likes to say he has 21 years this year. If he hadn't slipped, he would have had almost 40. But he likes to say he's got 21 years now. but he's only got 21 years, 1 year at a time. Because he never knows what's happening tomorrow. And if I can take my life like that, I take it 1 day at a time, 1 year at a time. I'm not looking forward to 21 years because I don't know if I'm going to get there. I've seen too many people since I came into the program with a lot of years that didn't get there. And being perfectly selfish, I have to say, better them than me, because with any luck, I'll be here to welcome them back. Thank you.
Okay, we now invite members of the audience to come up and share on the topic of quality, not quantity. And just a reminder, try and keep within 3 minutes. Thanks.
My name's Dennis. I'm an alcoholic addict. Quality, not quantity. I think that quality is the situations we have to walk through in life. And there's been a few of them in my life, because I've succeeded at doing everything in this sobriety that I never did when I was drinking. I just ran into a guy that threw me right off. My sobriety dates June the 30th, 1976. My first meeting, conference, I was 13 years old. My first drink, I was 5 years old. And I just ran into a guy that says, how can you be an alcoholic addict? And if you're an alcoholic addict, you can't be an alcoholic. Now, I started out drinking. And I started out in AA. And I've always felt like I was the odd man out at AA. Because right from the day that I started, I knew that I had to get this program to work for me. I could listen to what you told me about how you did it, but it had to work for me. And the other thing I knew is I knew from my experience that I didn't have to live up to your expectations of me. Because I tried to do that all my life while I was drinking, and I knew I could never succeed. But when it came to you, you allowed me to be me. And I kind of like that. And the best speaker I heard tonight was the one that couldn't remember. That's the best message I heard tonight. I don't know whether that has anything to do with quantity or not, but I understood what he was talking about. No? I don't know. It took me 30 years to get to my first world conference. I'm a little slow, but I don't know. Alcoholics Anonymous got quantity, quality too, eh? I like to remind people that it took us 58 years to get rid of the Al-Anon anonymity statement and change it to AA, because that's what happened. We used the Al-Anon statement for 58 years. I don't know. You know, I was thinking about what this guy said to me, you know, and I don't give a shit whether you shoved drugs up your ass, through your nose, or whatever you did. My only thing I want to do with you is save your life. And God will give me the answer to do that. If I trust God and do like they said tonight. God in this hand and AA in that hand. You know, I went blonde this year. Because I've never been a blonde. And I can't tell you about my experiences about being a blonde if I ain't been a blonde. Now I've been a blonde. I've been having some fun. You can ask me about my experiences about being a blonde. Is that quality? I don't know. But ever since I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've needed to check things out for myself. And I know what that guy was talking about tonight, you know, because I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous for the first 20 years. And then, when I got to NA, I found out that this is a whole new world out there. It's a whole new concept. And then I got to Cocaine Anonymous, and there was a whole new concept there. And then I went to CMA, and there's a whole new concept there. But the bottom line, it doesn't matter what you used. You were sick before you used. You just used to get sicker. I mean, that's right. I don't know what you did. I drank my first drunk, and I don't know. You see, the first time I ever drank, and I'm going to finish with this. The first time I ever drank, I was 5 years old. I was already an accomplished thief. There's already people telling me when we went by this jail in a home, a town close to mine where they had a gallows, that I was going to end up at gallows. But I had my first drink at 5 years old. And you know what? I did not like the fact that I lost control of my body. But I liked the feeling that I got from that alcohol. And I remember saying to myself at 5 years old, nobody is ever going to hurt me again. Thank you.
Well, my name is Faith, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Faith.
And I just wanted to share at an international convention. What could I tell you? Shit. I'm speaking in the microphone. I'm not talking about anything, really, to tell you the truth. Anyway, but I was speaking in the microphone. I'm not going to jump on anybody. Hey, it's 1:30 in the morning. Give me a break. Anyway, I don't stay up this late anymore. You know what I mean? But my birthday is Friday. And I'll be, yeah, thank you too. Thank you. I'll be 19, you know, and I think that's a hell of a long time. Now, I don't know about quantity and quality, but I think somebody might be able to stay here a long time and don't get better. But I don't think you're going to be able to not stay here a long time and get better. You know what I mean? You got to be here to get better. So I think they kind of... I believe in the steps. I haven't heard many people talk about the steps tonight. But I believe in the steps as a program of recovery. Because that's what they told me when I got here. They said that you could stop drinking, but if you truly want to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, you must work the steps. You know, and I didn't want to get drunk anymore. But I tell you what, the stuff I had going on sober wasn't too cool either. You know what I mean? I didn't necessarily want to do that anymore either. Because I was tired. I came in here very tired. And I used to say I was tired before I got here. And people would say, well, why don't you get more rest? And I'd say, but that's not what I'm talking about. And what I realized when I got here, I realized I was tired of life. I was tired of trying to make it work. I was tired of doing this thing that I didn't know how to do. They were talking about courage in the other meeting. You know, and I realized I thought I was the biggest punk in the world. You know, and I was very ashamed of that. And through working the steps, I found out everybody's a punk. That's why they have stories about heroes. If heroes were common, they wouldn't write stories about them. You know what I mean? And I thought I was the only one. You know, and I found out a lot of things about myself. I don't know what quality is. What is that? I don't know. And but you know, they told me too, and I truly believe this, is that it's always me. It's me even when it's you. You know what I mean? And that's a good thing. Because if it were really you, I'd be shit out of luck. You know what I mean? And I'm not shit out of luck, you know, because I have, by the grace of God, really, maybe not even by the grace of God, by being kicked to death, I've found the deal to look at me. And that's usually my second response, to tell you the truth. My first is usually you, and then it don't work. You know, I found you can talk. But you know the book, that reminds me of the book. The book says, you know, blaming others is as far as some of us get. You know, and thank God I've been able to move beyond that. And look at me. And look at me and what it is, what old ideas am I holding on to that keep me from the life I want? To keep me from the life I can have. I think if there is such a thing as quality sobriety, I think it is gaining the ability through the process of working the steps of being able to live a fulfilled life, a life that you want. You know, and really what I think happened is when I got there, and then I realized the life I really want is the life that this God thing, and I only call it God for want of a better word, that this God thing would have me have. And I found out it had nothing to do with being good, and I was really grateful for that. It's just about living life to the fullest. You know, and I think that's about as good as it can possibly get. And I think I'm on that journey. I feel like I am. That's a journey I want to be on. Maybe it is because, you know what, my life, it just gets better and better. It just gets better and better and better. You know, life beyond my wildest drunken dreams. That's what they told me when I got here. You'd have a life beyond your wildest drunken dreams. And I used to have a lot of dreams. And I used to talk a lot of stuff about what I was going to do. And I knew I wasn't going to do shit. You know what I mean? And that has changed. I mean, I'm in Canada. I paid for it myself. You know what I mean? On my own resources. I came because this is what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? And I was able to do that. You know, and that's something I was never able to do before. So I really realized that God is doing for me what I've never been able to do for myself, you know. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Tony C., and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tony.
This is a good topic because it happens to be, you know, I worked for Ford Motor Company, but I retired, and that was our slogan, quality, not quantity. And at one time, I had 6 years of being just sober, but I wasn't working the steps and doing the things, advice of my sponsor, you know, doing the right things, and nobody asked me to do things. And I go to the Hamburg group in Detroit and Harper Woods group, you know, where I live at. And I was asked to do an open talk at 1 year after, you know, after I came back, and a few people had resentments about me having just 1 year of sobriety and asked me to do open talk. And I was always told before that it's whoever got up the earliest in the morning has the most sobriety. You know, that's what I was told, you know. And so when I started the open talk, I said I worked a midnight shift, so, hey, you guys can take it from there, you know, and it's true, which I did, you know. And I retired from Ford Motor Company because of this program, because I'm doing the things, I'm working the steps now. And, I really want to work at this time because of the fact, you know, last time I didn't. I try to do my own inventory. And sometimes you get, you know, like, it's a touchy subject when somebody has more sobriety than you. And sometimes you feel intimidated. It intimidates some of the younger people. At least it did me. I only could say, talk about myself. But I went on and did my talk and everything. And I finished up. I'm trying to do the things. You know, nobody, when I had 6 years before and wasn't working the steps, nobody asked me to do a damn thing. I didn't ask to do open talks or different stuff like that because I'm not a speaker. I get nervous and all this other stuff like everybody else. But, you know, like, I'm trying to do the things that, you know, are right now, you know, and that's why right now, you know, because of this program, I'm not scared. I'm not, of trying to do things anymore. And, you know, it is the quality of your sobriety, you know, not the quantity. And see, like with me, and I ended it with like this, because see, you know, like I was, alcohol isn't my best friend. It's not anymore. And that's why chill bumps are racing all over and through my body. I don't know whether to laugh or cry. But now when you walk by me, I can look you straight in the eye. My body is no longer filled with substances that can cause me to die. I'm starting to feel emotion again. But is a man supposed to cry? I know I have sinned in the past, but guess what? So have you. God has blessed me today and he's the only one I have to answer to. When people whisper behind my back, no longer will I crumble, because I know I'm following the right path, and I'm learning to be humble. And if you throw stones at my house, they'll probably sail right through, because I left the windows and doors wide open. I did it just for you. There are long, bumpy roads in life as we travel from town to town. But remember, God doesn't want us to kick a man when he's down. It doesn't matter if you're yellow, white, red, or black. Please open your heart and let's start giving it all back. We got to start loving and respecting each other. That's my point of view, because love is more than a simple word or a phrase saying I do. It doesn't matter if you're small in stature or considered supersized. If you keep the faith in God, you receive the ultimate prize. God snatched him from the grasp of the devil, and he opened up my eyes. He touched his gentle hands on me, and he brought me back alive. But if my eyes never open again to see the sun arise, I'll cherish rapping with you today about the days gone by. I'll savor all memories, good and bad, and I can hold my head up high, because I know deep down in my heart that I gave him my best try. This is the last poem or rap God's asked me to pass on to you. With all that said and done, I just want to say thank you. I'm overwhelmed with joy that you heard about me and my ex-best friend, but I hope I made a new friend who's about to hear the end. Thank you.
My name is Jamie V. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the Crossroads Group in Staten Island, 10:30 in the morning on a Saturday morning to get all those people that are coming to hangovers, and hopefully we get them before to get to the liquor store on Saturday morning. I want to thank you very much, all three of you, for doing service for us, because if you're not here, there's no mic here. I learned early on, I had my sponsor still with me. I don't know, I hear people are firing, you know, there's grandiosity about firing people. My sponsor took me, and we learned tolerance here. And what he taught me was to stick on, that I'm a borderline genius with a learning disability, you know, the think side. It says that I'm not supposed to judge anybody here. How could I judge? I came in here as a caterpillar with no colors, crawling. I don't believe in God, but I was in heaven, and they threw me out because I'm a misfit. He sent me to hell, your hell. Devil says, you know what? I can't handle you guys down here no more. I got to kick your ass out. So he kicked me out and sent me back up to the human beings up here. And the normal people says, we don't want you. You're fired from this job. The wife can't handle like yourself. My wife, third wife, don't want me no more. AA says, come, we take you by the hand. Tell us your problem. Whatever it is, we'll find somebody just like you. No big eyes, no big U's. Little eyes and little U's. We're all in the same boat. How could I judge my quality or my quantity? I can't look at you. I can't. I can't judge you. I got to look. When I wake up in the morning, I wake up on top of the bed. I get to brush my teeth. If this person comes to me while I'm in the meeting and says, will you sponsor me? I must be doing something right. If my wife still stays with me and my children talk to me, I must be doing something right if I'm not getting fired from my job. I can't put my weight on quality because humility in the seventh step says, humbly ask to have these shortcomings taken away from me. So if I'm going to be humble, I can't say I have humility because you got to tell me I have humility. I can't then say I have quality, because if I say I have quality, it's like it can't be quality. Quality's got to be come by an action done by someone else to me. I've been a general service. I've been a district committee member working with Area 49 for years. My sobriety date is 1986. All I know that a day at a time, my life gets better and sponsees don't fire me. They tolerate me just like my sponsor. Some of them even told me they like me after a while. Most of them says, I don't like you. You're crazy. You're a tough guy. But then they say, man, I'm so glad I'm with you because you're really a deep down nice guy. This is an illness that wants to take my life. Because you come in here so well and strong, and we fight it with hands, and then he wants to take my life, and I got to come in here. And in the traditions, it says they have the wet brain group and then the mocus group. And they don't judge the groups. If I have those groups are not here, and I need to get to a meeting. Oh, but I can't go to that meeting because those people are the big book thumpers. I can't. The meeting for me saves my life. I can't judge. I can't judge. I was a top shelf drinker. Everything from the floor up becomes top shelf. I can't judge. You gentlemen came in here in disservice. It's not the time that we have here, is it? It's the time that I have today that I got to wonder to live. Am I going to, again, the tug of war is the tug of war. Bill W., the tug of war. From the bar to the telephone, the bar to the telephone. And that's all it get. I was paralyzed 5 years ago on my 15th anniversary. Why? Did I have too much time or did I have bad quality? No, I became a human being in a human race. Because the fifth tradition, that tells me I'm in that other human being that he talked about. I became a human being. So I'm going to have human experiences like being paralyzed. And I came to a meeting with my hands crippled up, my neck on a brace, and a gentleman came up to me and said,
"Would you sponsor me?"
And I looked at him the same way. "Hey, are you crazy? What can I do for you?" He says, "You have the willingness to come here and recover. And that's what I want." And you guys have a good morning.
I'm Jerry. I'm an alcoholic. And I've got a God and a home group and a sponsor. And I did the steps my sponsor his way. And I think that's why I get to stand here tonight. And the main reason I'm here is my sponsor said, "Go talk." And trying to decide if I had anything I could give you guys. And one of the things I got was the quality of Alcoholics Anonymous way before I wanted it and way before I knew I was getting it. My dad died in 1987, 20 years sober. And a couple of things that he did, the one thing that is a miracle, he called me on a Monday, he's in the hospital to tell me he's doing good. And his talk got real specific and real serious, and he started saying things that had happened in our lives and saying that if he could do it any different, he said he's doing the best, he's doing a ninth step with me. And that talk ended with me saying, "Dad, I know you love me, and you know I love you. There's nothing else we got to say." And that was on a Monday, and he died on a Wednesday. And so I did not have to go to that funeral and sit there and go, "Oh, if I could have only said this, if I only could have said that." And I did not have to be one of these guys in AA that said, "I got to go sit on his grave and try and do something." And my dad took care of it for me, paid the ticket before he left. God bless him. The other thing he did is at Living Amends before that was he started calling me every Sunday. And then he slipped in right at the end, and I didn't want to talk to him. I liked it. I was, "Oh, God, Dad." And we'd talk for a half an hour, and I love my dad, but, you know, I'm busy, and I was drinking. I sobered up in 92, by the way, so I didn't, you know, sober up when he's alive. And he'd end each conversation with, "Son, I love you." And I'd say, "I love you too, Dad." And after a little while, I'd say, you know, be getting done and say, "I love you, Dad. I love you too, son." And after, I don't know, year or 2 years, a long period of time, we're both telling each other we loved us. And you know, next thing you know, I got kids, and I wasn't a great dad, terrible dad. Thank God that my youngest was 4 when I sobered up. And but one of the things I did was, you know, I always told him I loved him. Didn't act like it, but, you know, I told him. And I've got a 23-year-old son. I'm not qualified to pronounce anybody alcoholic, but he's got every outward symptom. I'd be a fool not to recognize that, you know. And but we got this relationship. I may not like what he does, but when we're talking on the phone, it's when I'm done, it's, "Dad, I love you." And I've got a 22-year-old daughter, you know, and it hasn't always been good. But she just loves me to death. And she's 22 years old. And every time we get off the phone, it's, "Phew, love you, Dad." got a 17-year-old son. I don't make my 23-year-old son do that. But my 17-year-old son, I make him. You know, if he doesn't, I call him back, son. And that's from my dad. That's from Alcoholics Anonymous. I've got three grandchildren, my 3 and 4-year-old daughters. I love you, Grandpa. Right from my dad. And that's about all I got to say. Thanks.
I am Kevin. I'm definitely an alcoholic. I have the only requirement that I have a desire to not drink, and that's why I'm here. My home group is the 4 O'Clock Lounge in Staten Island, New York. My sobriety date is September 23rd, 2003. When I first came into AA, I raised my hand and I said I was an alcoholic because I wanted to fit in. That's what I did my whole life. And I had about a year when I realized that I'm definitely an alcoholic. I don't say that to convince myself. I say that because I'm definitely an alcoholic. Because I learned in these rooms and I learned through in this program, in this fellowship, that by coming here, more would be revealed. My sponsor told me about the onion and all that stuff, and things came back to me. I was always in trouble. I was drunk. I always had problems in relationships. I was drunk. About quality and quantity, the word sober, step one before entering recovery. So I got to work the steps to have quality of my sobriety. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, I've been hearing it all weekend about how much time you have and this and that. And I learned a good lesson 2 nights ago. I asked someone how much time they had, and this person said, since I got up this morning, that's how much time sobriety I have. And that's what it's all about. The old saying is, if you got up earlier than me, you got more sobriety time than me. But the way we work the program, we have to work the program through the steps. And regardless of what your higher power is, that's very important, that you work through your higher power and you work through the fellowship and you work the program, and you work it one day at a time. Because when I came into AA, I had a problem with I could never drink for the rest of my life. I had a problem with that. But I was told, no, Kevin, you don't have to do this for the rest of your life. You just have to do this today. And that I can deal with. Thank you.
My name's Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jeff.
That step work is definitely something I had to do. I had 8 years in, and never followed them steps. Stopped at step three and thought I'd give it to God and didn't have to go to AA. All I had to do was go to church and listen to a guy up in the pulpit, you know, and God's going to fix everything for me. Well, that didn't happen. It took me 8 years to get back here, and it's only been 7 months that I've truly worked the program, and I worked through the steps and got all that garbage from the past out and got a God of my understanding today, you know, and I thank him every morning. I thank him throughout the day, and I've truly been thanking him since I've been here. This is some powerful stuff right here going on in this conference, man, and it's all about love. You hear it, you heard it tonight. You're hearing it here in that main speaker, man, you know. It's a God thing going on, you know, and I truly got a hold of him today, and it's awesome. I went to the spiritual retreat. This thing started out in Ohio, and it's going to get big, you know. It went up into Michigan. That's where I'm from, is Michigan. And it's just totally awesome. I got this book from Chuck C. After I got done with that retreat, I'm sitting there at my home group, and I'm like, hey, you know, why do I keep staring at that book, you know? And I'm like, all right, God, I'll pick it up, you know. And this is why he had me pick it up right here. It's the Golden Key, and it says, I love you. It's none of my business what you think of me. It's none of my business. It's my business what I think of you, and I love you. Now, if you happen to love me back, it's a plus. So you can add to my life, but you can't take away. Did you hear me? This is one of the greatest things that you ever heard tell of. You can add to my life, but you can't take away. And everybody that lives can add to my life, but you can't take away. Because I'm not trading with you. I love you, period. First, because you're drunk. Second, because I know who you are, whether you do or not. You're God's children, every one of you. For that reason, I love you, and for no other. you know, and that's where I'm at today, man. And you know, I've meditated on this thing because my sponsor told me, you know, I got some anger issues sometime, you know, and it can go off. You got to meditate on that love and tolerance. And I really did do that, you know, and if you got that in your heart, you can't get angry, man. When you got love in your heart, you can't get angry. You can't hate, you know. It don't marry up with nothing, man, you know. And it's a truly beautiful thing. Thanks. That's all I got.
Hi, my name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, gentlemen, for your service. It was good to hear all of you. And my home group is my home groups are the Shields Group in Staten Island, New York, and the Empire State Group in Manhattan. And I think having two home groups kind of tells me that I probably have a problem with quantity periodically. And I tend to think, you know, Tom's a Superman, and that slogan's a good check on me. That I don't have to do everything, you know. Like, there's actually a small amount that I probably do need to do, and I maybe should do a little more than that. And a lot of times I do a little less than that, but. You fellas touched on it, and I think I got to remember it, too. This is something else that's going to teach me something about humility, you know, and my ego needs those checks constantly, you know, and part of it's the Superman thing. And the other thing, you know, I hope the hell I never say, you know, I got quality sobriety, you know, I don't need any more quantity or something. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, and I owe a lot to this fellowship. Nothing I could ever repay, you know, and if I'm starting to say that sort of stuff, you know, that my quality, you know, balances any quantity problems I have, you know, I kind of got to step back and think, you know, I didn't have a good time when I came here, you know, and I moved around a couple times, and it's hard to come back in the door, you know, and the quality of my sobriety is reflected on the desire I have to stay sober and desire I have to pass the program on, and I better know the program, you know, because I can bullshit people, too, and, you know, it's kind of bluff and, like, you know, do X, Y, and Z. The only message I'm supposed to carry is the message that was given to me, which is a message that came from our literature. Thanks, guys, for sharing tonight.
I'm an alcoholic, and my name's Jason. I'm grateful to be here. In fact, I'm grateful to be anywhere on a Saturday night, you know. I don't know how this thing works, but all I know is that I felt a lot of pain in my life, you know. All my life, it's all I knew was pain. I was sexually abused when I was 5 years old. I grew up in a violent alcoholic home, you know. And, you know, I was trying to survive that alcoholism and to develop my own. And I went through life, and that's all I did was hurt people. I knew fear like, just like the big book says, you know. Just driven by 100 forms of fear. And when it made me cocky, it was worse. And I was always got in trouble. You know, I always got in trouble because I fought back. I was never a fighter. I was a fighter. And it got me in trouble. I put tattoos all over my body because of fear, you know, because people like to stay away from people like that. You know, I threw my weight around as best I could. You know, I grew up in prisons and jails and boys' homes and young offender, you know, joints and that. And all, nobody had the tools to teach me how to live, become a decent member of society. And nobody had the tools. Everybody wrote me off. Parents said, I don't know what to do with you. You know? Judges said, I don't know what to do with you. Lawyers said, I can't help you. You really got it done this time. You know? Judge says, we're going to have to lock you up again. Police say, we got to get you out of here. You know? I had a psychiatrist take me out of his office one time. And he said, do you see these people in the waiting room? I said, yes. He said, I can help them. I can't help you. Don't come back. So Alcoholics Anonymous was gently reaching out to me all my life, you know, dropping things in the different institutions I've been in. I ran into the guy who gave me my first big book when I was just about 18 years old. And he signed it and gave it to me, him and this woman, Eddie G. and Cynthia. Took me to this convention in Toronto from the East Coast. You know, and I still never stopped then. I had to go do more research. I was in and out. I could never stay sober on the first three steps, the AA waltz, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. You know, it wasn't until I got into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, that I really started to open up my eyes, pry my mind open with the jazz of life. I grew up in the Catholic Church and I had a little bit of faith with that, but I lost it, you know, because of everything that was going on. And I started to believe, you know, seeing on the Discovery Channel one time in prison, that we come from apes, you know. And I used to believe that. I used to look at people in bars and say, there's one. Look at them. You know, Neanderthal. And that's what, and I developed an attitude that just really sucked. I hated people, and I hated God. You know, when I got to that point, there wasn't anybody, too many people left to play with, you know. I became a lone wolf, just like Wilson said. And, you know, I came in here, and it was a sunglass salesman, you know. I wasn't a psychiatrist, doctor, or lawyer, you know. Sunglass salesman, a park ranger. A guy who delivered pizza, man, for this place called Greco, you know, down on the East Coast. Was a fisherman and an oncologist, man. Perry carried the message to me to save my life. It was nothing that special. It's regular people. And today, I've been blasted into the fourth dimension. I'm here at this conference, my first Alcoholics Anonymous World Conference, with somebody that loves me, and I love her, you know. And we're in this here conference, and my mind's been blown away since I got here. And it's been blown away. I've been sober since September the 7th, 1999, you know. Well, I work in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Since that time, I earned a university degree. You know? With the college diploma, took me 2 years. University degree took me 4 years. I did it all pretty fast because that's the type of guy I am. Went to school all year round, made real good, made the dean's list. I got a good career going today. All because of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first got here and everybody would say, I lost this, I lost that, I lost this because of drinking. Truth was, I could never get it. I could never get none of them things because of my drinking. I could never get it to lose. But today I can say because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can lose them things today. If I go back out, if I frig this up, then what? You know? I'm just so grateful to be in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a powerful, powerful program. You know? Mother Teresa said it the best for me. God cannot fill what is full. So I'm full of garbage, hate, separateness, apart from this, self-condemnation, fear, anger, depression, and all them things that these qualities or virtues or whatever you want to call them that we're full of here. You know, I'm full of anyway. It wasn't until I could scoop them off, you know, in steps 4 and 5 that I could allow sunlight of the spirit into my body, you know, and the compulsion, obsession, and compulsion to drink was expelled from me. And that was one of the greatest gifts for me. You know, it's mind-blowing. I'm here at this Alcoholics Anonymous convention. I go in there, I just start crying like a baby, man. I stopped crying when I was 5 years old. I can cry now. That's a beautiful feeling. I'm no longer afraid. I don't have the fear no more. I'm not afraid of you people. I'm not afraid of out there in the jungle. I can walk a free man. You know, I've been given a new freedom and a new happiness, just like it says. I don't think they're promises, man. They're guarantees. They're not promises. They're guarantees. And just like the... If anybody's in pain here tonight, I'd just like to say, if anybody's in pain here tonight, the pain is in not doing the steps. You know? No human power could ever lead to alcoholism. You know, God could have more if you were sat. And, you know, just after... Just them steps, you know? And like the big book says, you know, door decision, talking about church step 3 was a vital and crucial step, you know. We could have little or no permanent sobriety unless at once followed by a strenuous action to clear away the records of the past. Thanks for listening.
My name's Tim, alcoholic. There's so much to say about quality and quantity. I've been thinking about... how easy it is for me to get confused about the quality of my life and the quality of my sobriety, how the two are very different. And believe, actually have found that, like, normally when the quality of my life is high, the quality of my sobriety lowers, you know. It's the gifts that draw me out more than the pain draws me in, you know. But when things are going good and I've done all this work and I've got myself here, alone, without y'all, or God, or anyone else, because I can handle this on my own, is when I'm on my way out. And I don't know it, you know, because I got things going well, like work, and family, and girls, and money, and things, and I look good, and blah, 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 I'm just a dressed up trash can. Because, you know, I'm not talking to anyone about what's going through my head on the inside, and what the little itty-bitty shitty committee has to say, and what they think about how I can just, you know, conquer the world on my own and let's just go, you know. And you know, I think sometimes, you know, I had more quality of sobriety when I had 6 months and I was on a pink cloud and I was willing like the dying. Or, you know, compared to when I had 3-4 years and I was, you know, not doing anything to, you know, get right with God and get honest with myself about how I was just a scared little boy, you know, and not wanting to deal with anything and not wanting to deal with the pain and, you know, just wanted to die, you know. And then, you know, 5 years sobriety, I thought I had horrible quality because I was going to meetings constantly and I was thinking, like, God, I keep going to meetings and I keep finding out how much I don't know. I don't know anything, you know. I keep coming and coming and I keep hearing all this stuff and, like, I don't know anything. You know, I knew everything a few years ago. What the hell's going on with my sobriety? The whole quality is going to crap, you know. And really it was... That was the quality, you know, of my sobriety. See, I got a busted director. You know, this direction thing here sends me in wrong directions. And, like, as for quantity, time don't mean nothing or all, you know, whoever's woke up earliest and not what you put, how many hours you put in, but what you put into the hours, you know. But I respect quantity, you know, because time messes with my head. I think, I'm here, you know, I got this much time, I should be here. Or, me and this girl broke up 6 months ago, I should be great, you know, but I'm, like, still horrible. What's going on, you know? Or, like, I've been at this company for this long, or, you know, this and that. But, like, you know, in this room, there's several hundred years of sobriety. You know what that means to me? That guarantees me that no matter what I go through today or have been through or am going to go through, somebody in here has done it. Thank God for all this quantity. Thanks for letting me share.
Oh, okay. My name is Joseph, an alcoholic. I got sober in Staten Island. My home group now is, I live in Washington, D.C. is the... Saturday morning men's rap at DuPont Circle. I got sober April 24th, 1988. And I'm sorry for your loss with your daughter. And, you know, thank you for sharing this meeting and leading the meeting. Quality, I'm a self-destructive guy, you know. And I will destroy myself to this day. Even without a drink, I can destroy myself, you know. This disease is powerful. And I got a long way to go still, you know. I just, I feel like, you know, I mean, I come to these conventions, my third one, and I hear people, and there's a lot to learn, you know. There's still a lot to learn, and the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know, you know. And I feel like I've learned in these rooms that I watch people, you know. There are people, I mean, even in this conference, there are people that I want what they have, and there are definitely people I see that I don't want what they have. I don't care how much time they have. It's a good example today. Somebody I don't want what he has to offer, I don't want it, you know. I don't care how many numbers you put before his birthday, you know. That's always been me. I've always watched people and try to gravitate to people that I think they have what I want because of the quality of life that I think I want for myself. I want to, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you know, I drank. I never felt comfortable who I was in my own skin. And I'm still working on that. You know, I think we're still peeling the onion. It's constantly peeling the onion to feel like today, you know, I don't have a drinking problem. I have a thinking problem today. And it still can get me. I'll wrap this up saying that, I live in a city where it's a very ambitious city. It eats its young. You know, the young people go to D.C. And it just eats them alive, you know. And I'm working that tightrope with quality of life and ambition, you know. And it's a tight one to walk sometimes. And, I thank God I have AA. I have a program. I feel like I don't live in fear like I used to. You know, I used to live in fear. Fear will grip me, and quality, I have a new sponsor, well, you know, guy I'm working with, it's tough to open up to a new sponsor, to a new man, to a new person all over again. The longer you get, I watch people. Like I said, I try to pick someone I want what they have, and the process of doing it again, it's been a difficult one for me. So I have a lot of issues still working on it, and I'm very grateful. Jamie's here is one of my first sponsors who shared before, you know, and it's good to see him after all he coming. Yeah, so last time 5 years ago, and over here, and I just want to say that thank you for being here. That's pretty much it. Thanks.
Sorry for those who wanted to share. We just ran out of time. I want to thank our two speakers, Bob and Tom. And Eamon and Graham for reading the 12 traditions, or 12 steps and 12 traditions. Now, would those who care to please join me in closing this meeting with a responsibility declaration. I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible.